Hello, everyone. It is time to read the Des Moines Register for this Friday, March 8th, 2024. A reminder, all material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of Iowans with a print disability. I'm Dennis May, and my partner at the microphone for the next 90 minutes is Barb Martin. For the first hour, we'll cover local and national news from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. Our second hour starts with birthdays and obituaries, followed by opinions, sports, and lifestyle news. We'll wrap up our broadcast with Dear Abby. Support for today's readings comes from the Des Moines Register and donations from individuals and listeners like you. Learn how you can keep the volunteer voices of IRIS going strong at iowaradioreading.org. And now let's take a look at the weather and the headlines from today's Des Moines Register. Our statewide AccuWeather forecast calls for showers in the morning, otherwise cloudy and breezy today with the winds from the north at 15 to 25 miles per hour, partly cloudy tonight. The forecast for Des Moines calls for a high today of 45, a low of 26, breezy, some rain in the morning. On Saturday, a high of 48 with a low of 26, sunny and breezy. Across the area, morning rain and cloudy and breezy. Turning now to the headlines in today's Des Moines Register on the front page. Election reform bill faces widespread opposition. Property tax cuts sting at City Hall. Des Moines leaders say state is pinching budget. And the House wants to spend $3 million to train armed staff and help buy guns. And here to get us started with today's Des Moines Register is Barb. Take it, Barb.
Thanks. Majorities oppose restricting ballot name changes and banning drop boxes. This is by Stephen Gruber Miller. Majorities of Iowans oppose changing Iowa's law to allow presidential candidates convicted of felonies to appear on the ballot or to ban the use of drop boxes to return absentee ballots. A narrow majority also oppose efforts to restrict challenges to whether presidential candidates can appear on the Iowa ballot, like the kinds of efforts states around the country have attempted to disqualify former President Donald Trump from running for president again. But a majority of Iowans favor requiring mail-in ballots to be received by the county auditor by the close of business a day before Election Day, one day earlier than the current law. The results from the new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll come as lawmakers consider a wide-ranging election bill that would make all four changes to the state law. The bill, House File 2610, passed the Republican-controlled Iowa House on March 5 on a party-line vote. Similar legislation has passed out of a committee in the Iowa Senate and could soon be debated by the full chamber. The legislation would allow candidates with felony convictions to run for federal office in Iowa, ban the use of ballot box drop boxes, set an earlier deadline for returning mail-in absentee ballots, and make it harder to challenge presidential candidates' place on Iowa's ballot. The poll of 804 Iowa adults was conducted February 25 to 28 by Seltzer and Company, and it has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 percent points. Of the four election-related policy changes tested in the poll, allowing presidential candidates convicted of felonies to run for office receives the largest opposition. The poll found nearly three-fourths of Iowans oppose efforts to change Iowa law to allow convicted felons to appear on the ballot for president, while one-fourth are in favor. Another 2% are not sure. The results show little variation among Republicans, Democrats, and political independents. Trump faces 91 felony charges in four criminal cases around the country related to his handling of classified documents after leaving office and his efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. He has pleaded not guilty. None of the cases are gone to trial. Renee Hanlon, a 70-year-old poll respondent from Anamosa, cites Trump as the reason that she opposes changing the law to get people convicted of felonies, to let people convicted of felonies run for president. He's a crook, he's a liar, he's a thief, she said. And if we allow that, that means if he finally does get convicted, that means that he could still run for president. I don't think so. Hanlon is a retired U.S. Navy Reserve officer and a registered Democrat who considers herself more of an independent. If it weren't for Trump, she said, she thinks she'd feel differently about the issue. People make mistakes, she said. They pay for it, and they should be able to move on. Matt Taylor, a 29-year-old Republican poll respondent from Altoona, allow felons to run for president. Maybe I'm just more strong-headed, but I think that if you've gone down the road and if you've been convicted of a felony, it's probably the price you pay, in my opinion, he said. But Taylor, who works in telecommunications, said that he feels differently about the 91 felony charges Trump is facing. I think that's just a political move to try to keep him under wraps, he said. I know he's facing those, but I don't feel like there's a lot of evidence. He said he doesn't think Trump will be treated fairly by the judicial system. I think I'd make an exception for a former president just because he is in my opinion, wouldn't get the fair trial other people would, he said. A majority of Iowans also oppose efforts to restrict challenges to the names of presidential candidates on election ballots, like those Donald Trump has faced in other states. Just over one-third favor restricting such challenges against candidates, while 51% are opposed and 13% are not sure. Taylor said that he doesn't agree candidates should be able to be removed from the ballot. No state should have the power to take a name off the ballot, he said. Everyone should have the right to choose who they want to. Trump has faced challenges in several states under Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which bars former officials from holding office again if they have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled Monday in a 9-0 opinion that Colorado must include Trump on its primary ballot, saying that states do not have the power to enforce the 14th Amendment against candidates for federal office. The decision effectively cuts off the potential of using the insurrection clause to remove Trump from other states' ballots around the country, either in the primary or general election. Patrick Bingford, a 77-year-old poll respondent from Sioux City, said that he thinks Trump plainly should be disqualified from holding office again under the 14th Amendment. Bingford, who is retired from working in Iowa beef packers, is a registered Democrat who considers himself more of an independent. He called the Supreme Court's decision very disappointing news. If you've taken an oath and violated it, then you should not be allowed to take that oath again, he said. I think it's pretty clear. But apparently I'm not as intelligent as the Supreme Court, and I wasn't appointed to my crusty job by Trump. My cushy job, huh? 56% of Iowans oppose banning the use of ballot drop boxes for Iowans returning absentee ballots, while 41% favor a ban and 3% are unsure. Hanlon said that she thinks drop boxes are a convenient way to return ballots and said the mail system is too uncertain. You can't count on the mail, she said. I might mail something today here from Anamosa, and you might get it in Des Moines a week later, so that's not reliable anymore. Republicans' opinions on the question are the inverse, with 56% in favor and 41% opposed. The overwhelming majority of Democrats oppose a ban at 77%, with 22 in favor. A majority of independents are also opposed at 56%, while 39% are in favor. A majority of Iowans support setting an earlier deadline to return mail-in absentee ballots. The bill would require mail-in ballots to be received by the county auditor by close of business the day before Election Day to count. Under current law, ballots count as long as they are received by the time the polls close on Election Day. 61% of Iowans favor the change, 35% oppose it, and 3 are unsure. Among Republicans, 73% are in favor and 24% are opposed. For Democrats, 43 are in favor, 54% opposed. And independents match the state overall with 61 favor, 35 opposed. Taylor said that he's concerned about the integrity of mail-in voting in general. I don't trust the authenticity of it as much as I do with an in-person system, he said. I'd be in favor of a better way of verifying the mail-in ballots. Hanlon opposes the earlier deadline, saying that she resents remarks from Trump and others who claim without evidence that there's widespread fraud. Why are they making us do it a day early? Hanlon said. That's not democratic. That's not what voting was supposed to be all about. Everybody's vote is supposed to count.
Our next article from the front page of today's Des Moines Register, Property Tax Cuts Sting at City Hall. This is written by Virginia Barada. Des Moines leaders say state is pinching budget. Des Moines city leaders say a decade's worth of property tax cutting legislation has left them grappling with a crippling budget. In the face of soaring property tax assessments across Iowa in 2023, lawmakers passed House File 718, a bill meant to keep those growing assessments from turning into dramatically higher tax bills for homeowners. But in the efforts to keep money in the taxpayers' pockets, the legislation limits the amount of revenue cities and counties can collect from property taxes, which Des Moines city leaders say makes it harder to balance the city's pocketbook and leaves some services at stake. Des Moines City Manager Scott Sanders said House File 718 is the proverbial cherry on top of the state's detrimental changes in the tax system that have been compounding over the last decade. For Des Moines, the impact of these legislative changes totaled $12.5 million in fiscal year 2024, which began on July 1st. That included a $3.5 million hit from the Senate File 181 passed last year to correct a state property tax calculation error that would have put residents on the hook for millions of extra dollars in payments. As the ways for cities to collect revenue shrink, residents' expectation for the city to expand services has grown, especially for social services meant to address homelessness, public safety, and mental health, city officials say. Des Moines Finance Director Nick Schall calls the situation, quote, a catch-22, and says if the city can't come up with alternative revenue sources, those services could be disrupted or lowered, and the city manager and the city council will need to make hard decisions on budget priorities. And Des Moines is not to blame. Iowa League of Cities Director Alan Kemp said in an email that cities of all sizes are reporting a loss or limitation of revenues and revenue options, yet cities face the same inflationary pressures that everyone in the economy faces, he said. More than 200 of Iowa's 947 cities saw negative growth in revenue in the past fiscal year, according to the league. Property taxes make up the bulk, between 50 and 60% of Des Moines' revenue in its nearly $260 million general fund, which pays for city services such as public safety, streets and parks, and recreation programs. Des Moines' total property tax levy rate is $16.61 per $1,000 of taxable value and is just one of several levies on a homeowner's bill. West Des Moines Finance Director Tim Stiles says the city had to pull several million dollars from savings to balance its budget because of legislative changes. What's more, he says the legislature's changes made property taxes more complicated for taxpayers. Quote, and to me, you can't have a good conversation about property taxes unless you understand it. And nobody can understand it, end quote, he said. Sanders said Des Moines managed to balance the budget for the upcoming fiscal year 2025, which starts July 1st, but it wasn't without some financial Tetris. Schall says over the past several budget cycles, the city has increased its reliance on the 1 cent local option sales and service tax, and the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, a federal economic recovery package meant to provide relief from the effects of COVID-19, which will run out next year. The city's interest rate income also has allowed it to fill gaps. City officials say it's too soon to tell what services could be impacted, but Sanders and Shaw say budgeting will become more challenging in the coming years. In the long run, the city needs to come up with alternative sources of revenue to avoid service cuts or issuing more debt, they said. So what changes by the legislature are squeezing the city's budgets, you might ask? Well, House File 718 consolidated 15 individual tax levies into a general services levy for cities, which will be capped at $8.10 per $1,000 in taxable value. Shaw said Des Moines' levy already is at that limit. It also established a formula that requires local governments to use a portion of any revenue growth above 3% to lower property taxes. If a city's or county's revenue does not grow by at least 3%, it would not need to reduce its levy. Des Moines grew by about 4% in taxable valuations this year, but due to the new system, saw about a 2% increase in revenue, Sanders said. This resulted in about $1.5 million loss in the general fund levy for fiscal year 2025. When the bill passed, Republican legislators predicted it would result in a $100 million property tax cut statewide, a win for taxpayers. The old days of local governments getting an assessment windfall and leaving your levy rate the same are over. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican from Council Bluffs, the bill's Senate floor manager, said at the time, "If valuations rise, your levy rate will fall. What we do here today changes the entire dynamic of our property tax discussions here in this state." At the city's budget meeting in February, Councilmember Chris Coleman called it a tax on, quote, being cool. If the city invests in itself and, in turn, people want to pay more to live in Des Moines, the city gets no return on that investment, he said. The whole thing is as stupid as a policy you can create, Coleman said. Mayor Connie Boysen said the city is almost penalized for improving. Neighboring West Des Moines saw a 4% growth rate, though its assessments grew more than 7% in fiscal year 2024. Stiles said the city is in better shape than many other cities, but still faces a challenging future. In fiscal year 2024, city revenue grew 4%, but expenses went up 12%. In the next year, West Des Moines will tap into about $7 million in reserve funds to balance its budget, but with only $50 million in savings, the city will need to find alternative funding sources for future budgets, he said. Other bills that impacted city budgets include the commercial and industrial rollback in 2013, which commercial, industrial, and railroad properties had been taxed at 100% of their assessed value, but the bill lowered it to 90% over 2 years. The multi-residential rollback in 2013. This bill created a new multi-residential property class, which includes assisted living facilities and apartment complexes. They used to be taxed as commercial properties, but were reclassified as residential properties, dependent on a rollback rate that changes annually. This change has occurred over 8 years. And finally, the business property tax credit backfill in 2022. The first $150,000 of commercial properties eligible are subject to the residential rollback for taxable value calculations. Any assessed value over $150,000 is subject to commercial industrial rollback of 90%. So, what does this all mean for Des Moines and other metro cities? Well, Kemp says the League has tracked news articles across the state covering the struggles that cities and counties are facing in the wake of this legislation. Some cities, like Kelowna, he said, may have to cut back on library hours and other services. Others may have to leave vacant employee positions unfilled. Given that Des Moines continues to grow, Sanders says the city has to figure out how it will fund more services with less property tax revenue. In particular, the community expects the city to pay more to address social needs. That would be mental health, food insecurity, and homelessness, rather than the usual road construction and city maintenance. And residents' demands for the city to chip into these social services continue to grow louder, he said. Yet, it continues to rely on each streams of revenue to fund even the status quo. In fiscal year 2024, the city used ARPA money to cover $33.4 million worth of operational expenses and capital improvement projects. Nearly $4.6 million in ARPA money will be used to fund operations in the upcoming fiscal year. The city also is using more than 15%, or about $8.8 million, of local option sales tax revenue to cover operational costs for fiscal year 2025. That's up from about $5.1 million in fiscal year 2024. Some of the money in the new budget will be used to pay salaries of 19 officers on the police department staff. Des Moines leaders say it's difficult to predict any shortfalls for fiscal year 2026. With the, quote, thousands of variables from the property tax system changes, it's hard to tell the magnitude of what could be waiting for us, Sanders said. Art Whitmack, president of the Taxpayers Association of Central Iowa, an organization that provides education on tax issues facing Central Iowans, services. The public's ability to support those services isn't unlimited. There's got to be a balance, Whitmack said. He said, with the property tax system changes, the legislature is trying to reel in cities' budgets. They've got to feel the same tension that the state does and that the residential property owners feel balancing their own budgets, he said. They've got to live within their means. Now, how they do it and what they choose to do is up to them.
House wants to spend $3 million to train armed staff and help buy guns. Stephen Gruber Miller. Iowa House lawmakers are pushing through a bill that would provide $3 million to pay for training for school districts that choose to arm staff members and could be used to buy guns for school employees. The legislation, House Study Bill 692, is part of a larger bill with other school safety requirements. It is meant to complement a separate measure House lawmakers passed last week that would allow teachers and other school staff to obtain a professional permit to carry guns on school grounds and provide them with legal immunity for the use of reasonable force. Both bills are part of Republicans' legislative response to a deadly shooting at Perry High School in January. School districts would be limited to grants of $25,000 under the bill, and they could use the money to purchase infrastructure and equipment related to arming staff or to facilitate the requiring staff training. Schools could also use the money to provide stipends to employees who participate in the training associated with employee permits to carry weapons, the bill states. The bill passed the House Appropriations Committee Wednesday on a party-line vote after Republicans amended the legislation to create the grant program for costs associated with arming school staff. Representative Adam Zamber, a Democrat from Iowa City, asked the bill's sponsor, Representative Carter Nordman, Republican of Panora, if schools could use the money to buy guns for teachers and other staff. Yes, Nordman said. Zabner called the proposal ridiculous. The solution for school shootings should not be state money to put more guns in schools, he said. That is ridiculous. It's shameful. It's not a solution to the problem. Nordman said Republican lawmakers have a multi-pronged approach to school safety. He said he and his colleagues have met countless times with the Iowa Department of Education, as well as students, parents, teachers, and administrators, and law enforcement in Perry since the shooting. We are taking multiple steps to continue to make our schools safer, and this is another great step in the right direction, he said. The bill would also require school districts to conduct school safety reviews and share the results with law enforcement, create a task force to review school infrastructure safety and security standards, and require the schools to have emergency radios that are capable of contacting law enforcement. The original bill would have provided $3 million for a grant program for schools to purchase emergency radios, but the amendment puts that money toward training and employee stipends for school districts that choose to arm staff. Nordman said that Governor Kim Reynolds has agreed to use $3 million of federal American Rescue Plan Act dollars to pay for the emergency radios. Nordman said it would be up to each school district to decide whether to adopt a policy allowing staff to be armed. Republicans' bill to allow districts to arm school staff and grant them legal immunity also cleared another legislative hurdle after passing the House last week. A Senate subcommittee approved House File 2586 in a hearing Wednesday, sending it to the full Education Committee. Senator Lynn Evans, Republican of Orillia, who chaired the subcommittee, said there were still questions about specifics in the bill, but he said that he hoped it would reduce concerns from insurers after two districts that had opted to arm staff were denied coverage and then dropped their plans. I would hope to see a couple of insurers come to the table and be interested in partnering with schools, Evans said. Dennis?
Thank you. And turning over now to the Metro and Iowa sections before giving the headlines, I'm going to... It's a large photo on the front page of the Metro and Iowa sections and entitled Cyclones Honor Randy Peterson. Now, those of you who listen to the Register and listen to sports probably recognize Randy Peterson as the writer for the Des Moines Register who covers Iowa State athletics. In this large photo, it shows Iowa State Athletics Director Jamie Pollard shaking Peterson's hand while Peterson holds a very large plaque that shows the Iowa State logo and 52 years. And they are standing on the basketball court, and behind them, many fans are standing, ovation and applauding. And the photo caption is, Des Moines Register sports columnist Randy Peterson is greeted by Iowa State Athletics Director Jamie Pollard before Wednesday's men's basketball game versus BYU at Hilton Coliseum in Ames. Iowa State honored Peterson for his 52-year career at the Register. The Des Moines native and East High and Drake alum is retiring later this year. And now our headlines on the front page of the Metro and Iowa section. Jury backs WHO 13 in Height Susan lawsuit. A bill could bring murder charges for death caused by fentanyl. And Come and Go in downtown Des Moines is closing. I'm going to take the article. Jury backs WHO 13 in Height Susan lawsuit. Fired anchor claims station discrimination, written by William Morris and Philip Jones. WHO 13 was not motivated by discrimination when it laid off its oldest female news anchor in 2020, a jury has decided. Sonia Heitzusen, now 56, sued WHO owner Nexstar Media, news director Rod Peterson, and general manager Bobby Totch in 2021 and alleged age and gender discrimination. The case went to trial last week on Wednesday, the jury found from the station. The verdict came after closing arguments in which Heitzusen's attorney, Lawrence Dempsey, asked jurors to award her more than $1.5 million in damages, including $92,863 in back pay, $800,000 for emotional distress, and $650,000 in future emotional damages. Dempsey accused the station of terminating the longtime anchor because it wanted younger, prettier talent in front of the cameras. She dedicated her life to the speaking the truth to power. Despite her dedication, Nexstar, Peterson, and Totch ended her career, Dempsey said. It was a plan that involved bringing on the cool kids, and Ms. Heitzusen was not part of that plan. Station executives argued throughout the trial that Heitzusen was let go as part of a broader layoff based on her higher compensation and less essential work duties than those of other anchors. Nexstar attorney Chris Holm told jurors in his closing arguments that, from the company's perspective, the case was common sense. This case is about dollars and cents. You've heard testimony from various witnesses, including Bobby Totch, that he selected Ms. Heitzusen for the reduction in force because she made a lot of money, $120,000, and her role was redundant, Holmes said. By making that selection, he was able to keep several other employees. That's it. It's not a Hollywood story. It's not a courtroom drama. It might be kind of boring, but that's what happened. Dempsey told jurors that Heitzusen consistently received better performance reviews than other male and female WHO anchors and reporters. He pointed to station documents preceding her 2020 termination, touting the station's, quote, hip, young, relatable talent, and that in the 3 years after her departure, WHO hired 12 much younger reporters and anchors, 8 of them women. That's how they thought they would win over viewers in this market, Dempsey said. Holm also pointed to station employment records to bolster his case. He noted that the 2020 layoff in which Heitzhusen was let go covered 8 employees, 6 of them men ranging in age from their 20s to their 60s. Does that sound like sex and age discrimination when you break down the sex and age demographics? 6 men, 2 women, 4 under the age of 33, he asked. During the trial, Heitzhusen and her former anchor or co-anchor, Aaron Kiernan, who is still at the station, testified that Peterson, their direct supervisor, had a pattern of making comments about women's age and weight even before Heitzhusen was let go, and that the station had a pattern of doling out recognition and other perks more generously to their male colleagues. Holm called those allegations, quote, unsupported, and urged jurors not to take the bait and remain focused on the station's business case for the layoffs. He also sought to poke holes in her case for damages, questioning Heitzhusen's therapist credentials and disputing whether any stress she may have sought treatment for was truly related to her job. And he questioned Heitzhusen's claim to be devastated by the loss of her career, saying she'd made no effort to apply for jobs at KCCI, WOI, or in other news markets. And frankly, we think the evidence is overwhelming that we don't even need to talk about damages, but when you talk about emotion and distress, it needs to be casually connected to the termination to award damages, Holm said. Attorney Tom Newkirk, who gave the rebuttal statement for Heitzhusen, focused on the bigger picture, accusing WHO and the TV news industry of systemic bias against older female employees. It's only age and gender in this world of news that makes us not see her, he said. Mr. Tosh did not see her as a main anchor. That's what this case was about. Anyone can be fired, anyone can be laid off. But when it comes to these things, such as gender and age, that we cannot change, the law says, we will protect you. In a statement after the verdict, Heitzhusen, now spokesperson for the Iowa State Auditor's Office, thanked her friends, family, and attorneys for supporting her. I know that any lawsuit carries risk, and I also know that if I hadn't taken this stand, I would have regretted it, letting down myself, my profession, and other women who face the same fate, she said. I was not the first and will not be the last woman to suffer this fate, but I am not giving up, she said. I will continue to support my colleagues and other women who face the same age and gender discrimination. The fight is not over. Gary Whitman, a spokesman for Nexstar, said in a statement that the company had been vindicated by the verdict. From the beginning of this lawsuit in 2021, we have maintained that Nexstar and WHO-TV acted in good faith and in deciding not to renew Ms. Heitzhusen's contract. Today, a jury agreed, he said. We make staffing decisions based on legitimate business reasons in compliance with applicable laws, and we will continue to do so.
Come and Go in downtown Des Moines is closing. This is by Philip Jones. Downtown Des Moines retail struggles continue as the Come and Go confirmed Thursday. It will close its final urban walk-up store at 319 7th Street. Come and Go spokesperson Taylor Bolin said the store will close March 24. The pending shutdown, first reported by Axios, will come 4 weeks after Walgreens closed its downtown store in the financial center at 666 Walnut Street, and as Hy-Vee has drastically cut the hours of its 420 Court Avenue store, citing what it said are falling sales and rising crime. The planned come-and-go closure comes as Salt Lake City-based Maverik prepares to absorb the company into a convenience store chain. It's convenience store chain. It purchased Come and Go from the Des Moines Kraus Group in August. We've learned a lot about operating our fuel-less concepts, however. They no longer fit into our long-term plans in Des Moines, Bolin said. We'll continue to focus our efforts on locations that best serve our customers with fuel. Delicious food, great service, and a clean and welcoming environment. Come and Go debuted the experimental walk-up store concept in May of 2020 at the site of one of the most famous episodes in Des Moines civil rights history. Denied service in 1948 at the Katz Drugstore, the space Come and Go now occupies. Civil rights pioneer Edna Griffin staged boycotts and sit-ins and became a plaintiff in a lawsuit that ended up before the state Supreme Court, which affirmed that discrimination was indeed illegal in Iowa. The building is now named for her. Lacking a parking lot, the store in the Central Business District has catered to office workers and downtown residents looking for pizza, sandwiches, salads, beer, soft drinks, and select wine and liquor. The store also has packaged snacks and household medicines and toiletries. Its opening came just after the COVID-19 pandemic reached Iowa and many downtown office employees shifted to working from home. Come and Go will continue to lease the space and use it for training and other uses, Boland said. It opened similar walk-up stores in Ames, Denver, and Omaha, Nebraska, but closed them in December of 2022. Though some work has shifted back to Des Moines offices, with employers including Principal Financial requiring employees to spend at least part of their week there, downtown foot traffic has yet to return to its pre-pandemic level. In addition, Wells Fargo, once the Des Moines Metro's largest employer, has made deep cuts in its workforce and is shifting most of its operations, including a large segment formerly downtown, to its Jordan Creek campus in West Des Moines. In January, Walgreens announced that it would close its store in the financial center after more than a century of operating Central Business District locations. It did not cite a reason, but for a decade, it had endured the partial closure of Walnut Street and more recently the loss of a major skywalk connection as the kaleidoscope at the hub was demolished to make way for a planned residential tower. The opening of Hy-Vee in 2017, as well as the Come and Go and a similar Dollar General urban concept, DGX, brought additional competition. The closure of Come and Go leaves only DGX in the Equitable Building at 604 Locust Street, the Downtown Pantry at 218 6th Street, and Hy-Vee as significant Central Business District retailers offering grocery items, despite robust growth in the area's residential population over the past few decades. And the future of Hy-Vee is unclear after it abruptly changed its hours on February 5, cutting them by a third to 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., savings that they had not been consulted, saying that they'd not been consulted, and city officials were caught off guard by the change, which does not comply with a 2015 development agreement that specified longer hours. After pushback from the city and residents, Hy-Vee changed the hours to 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., though it has not officially announced the shift. Knapp Properties, the developer of the mixed-use building where Hy-Vee operates, stands to lose millions of dollars in the tax increment financing if found in breach of that agreement. The city also sold the land for the building to Knapp at a fraction of the assessed value. On Monday, Des Moines City Councilman Josh Mandelbaum, whose ward includes a downtown area, said that the city and Hy-Vee are in negotiations over the change in hours. The city said that it has not yet enacted a 45-day window as provided in the agreement for the store to come back into compliance. Staff has continued to have conversations with them, Mandelbaum said. Mandelbaum repeated his insistence that it is important for downtown to have retail options, and he and Des Moines Police have pushed back on Hy-Vee's a contention that the store has been plagued with crime. Downtown isn't just a business district. It's also a neighborhood, Mandelbaum said. I think those pieces continue to be just as strong. And in fact, what we see is our downtown neighborhood continuing to grow.
Our next article, bill could bring murder charges for deaths caused by fentanyl. A bill advancing through the Iowa legislature would create first-degree murder charges aimed at dealers who sell fentanyl. But concerns linger that the legislation could result in lifelong imprisonment for teenagers and others who unknowingly share drugs laced with the substance. House File 2576 passed the chamber earlier this week and is now moving through the Senate. It would create making unlawfully delivering, dispensing, or otherwise providing fentanyl or a fentanyl-related substance to another person, which results in that person's death, first-degree murder. The legislation aims to crack down on the circulation of the drug that has led to an increase in U.S. overdose deaths. It comes a year after Iowa imposed stronger sentences for manufacturing, delivering, or possessing fentanyl, and ramped up prison sentences resulting from death by the drug. Quote, there's no fear of any consequences, said Representative Ann Meyer, Republican from Fort Dodge, referring to dealers selling fentanyl. This is an extreme punishment because we have an extreme problem in Iowa. Meyer's bill received wide bipartisan support, passing the House 86-12. Democrats who opposed the measure said it was written broadly enough that charges could be brought against those who distribute fentanyl unknowingly, like a high school student who shares another type of drug they bought from a friend. Representative Rick Olson, Democrat from Des Moines, called it a dragnet measure that will catch people that aren't criminal. An attempt by Representative Megan Saranovas, Democrat from Des Moines, to amend the bill to apply only to those who knowingly provide fentanyl was shot down by Republicans. Meyer warned that it would dilute the purpose of the bill and, with intent, often being difficult to prove. Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican from Sioux Center, who led the subcommittee Thursday considering the bill, noted that failed amendment in the House and adding that we're not the first to think about that potential problem. Do we want to charge that person with first-degree murder? Taylor said. Is the charge going to fit the crime there? The bill advanced to consideration by a full committee in the Senate with recommendations for further changes by Taylor. It remains to be seen what these changes could entail. And here's another short article in the Metro and Iowa section. Des Moines unveils renderings for new firehouse. Clark Street Station will replace 1959 facility. The Des Moines Fire Department has unveiled final designs for its fire station number 4, showing a sleek, modern replacement for the city's second oldest station. The 21,000-square-foot station planned on Clark Street between Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway and 19th Street will have a primary frontage comprised predominantly of brick and storefront glass. The brick facade will echo the more traditional station it replaces, Palo Orlando of Substance Architecture, the firm that designed DART Central Station downtown, told the city's Urban Design and Review Board on Tuesday. Built in 1959, the existing station is located at 917 University Avenue. The project will go out for bid in June, with construction scheduled to begin shortly after and to take 18 months to complete. It's anticipated to cost $11.6 million. The Des Moines Council voted last year to spend $500,000 to acquire and clear two homes on the property. Other spots were considered, including one near Broadlands Medical Center, but none provided the needed access to the area of a current service gap from the intersection of 34th Street and Hickman Avenue to the intersection of 16th Street and Carpenter Avenue. So what will happen to the existing fire station number 4? Well, it'll take about 2 years to fully vacate the existing station, Des Moines Fire Department informed the board. Discussions will take place in 2025 regarding the future use of the site.
Bill would penalize non-consensual AI pornography, by Stephen Gruber Miller. Iowa lawmakers are advancing bills that will make it easier for law enforcement to prosecute non-consensual AI-generated pornography using someone's likeness, often known as deep fakes. Two bills dealing with the subject passed the Iowa House on Wednesday, and one of those is headed by Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. House File 2240 would criminalize the distribution of pornographic images of adults that are created or altered using artificial intelligence or other means. By mapping on a victim's face into pornographic or material, a defendant can distribute the fake content to extort or harass the intended victim, said the bill's author, Representative Helena Hayes, who's a Republican from New Sharon. This content is not only becoming more realistic, but also much easier to create. Iowa's current harassment law already prohibits disseminating or publishing or posting sexual images of another person if the person does not consent to the image's distribution. The bill would make clear that the law covers someone whose recognizable image is altered to depict them engaging in sex acts. The crime would be an aggravated misdemeanor, which carries a 2-year sentence. Senate File 2243 also received a unanimous House vote Wednesday after passing the Senate unanimously earlier this week. The bill would make clear that using the likeness of an identifiable minor to create an altered fake pornographic image is covered by Iowa's current law prohibiting the sexual exploitation of a minor, including the possession or purchase of pornographic images of children. The bill's Senate floor manager, Senator Kevin Allons, a Republican of Salix, said that the bill addresses a gap in the law. Iowa's children must be protected from exploitation by advancing technology, he said. This bill will ensure the existing felony penalties for exploitation of a minor also applying when AI is utilized for this crime. A first offense violation is a Class D felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison, while a second offense would be a Class C felony, which carries a sentence of up to 10 years. Next item, Reynolds endorses Trump despite his past criticism. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has put her support behind Donald Trump heading into the November election now that he is the last Republican standing in the presidential primary fight. Joe Biden, quote, has been a disaster for our country, she posted to social media. Higher prices, inflation, an open border, crime, and the detection of Americans' image on the world stage, destruction of American image. I will do everything to defeat him and elect Donald Trump for president of the United States. Reynolds had endorsed Florida Governor Don DeSantis for president ahead of the Iowa caucuses, saying that she didn't believe Trump could win in a general election. But she has said throughout the election cycle that she would ultimately support the party's nominee regardless of who it is in November. We are Republicans, and when this is done, we get behind whoever our nominee is and move forward, Reynolds told the Des Moines Register ahead of the caucuses. Her support came the day former United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley ended her White House bid, making Trump the only Republican still in the race. He is expected to quickly amass the delegates necessary to clinch the party's nomination. Trump has targeted Reynolds repeatedly over the past year, first for declining to endorse his campaign and remaining neutral, and then for weighing in on behalf of DeSantis in November. He wrote on social media at the time that Reynolds' endorsement of DeSantis would be the end of her political career. Two extremely disloyal people getting together is, however, a very beautiful thing to watch, Trump continued. They can now remain loyal to each other because nobody else wants them. Reynolds joins the 89% of Iowa Republicans who say that they will vote for Trump in November, according to the latest Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll, even after many supported other candidates in the party's January caucuses. According to the poll, Trump would nearly double his margin of victory over Biden if a rematch of their 2020 contest were held now, winning 48% to 33% among likely voters. Iowa's U.S. Senator Joni Ernst also shared her support for the former president on social media Wednesday, becoming the final member of the U.S. Senate Republican Leadership Conference to do so. She had withheld any endorsement ahead of the caucuses. "We must beat Joe Biden and get this country back on track," she wrote on X, formerly Twitter. "Donald Trump has my support." Okay, Dennis?
House okays social media restrictions for use. Iowa House lawmakers approved a bill Wednesday that would require children to have their parents' permission to open and use social media accounts. House File 2523 would prohibit those under 18 years old from creating an account on platforms like Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok before receiving express permission from a parent or guardian. That parent or guardian can revoke permission at any time and would be provided a password or other means of access to monitor activity on the platform. Iowa's Attorney General would also be allowed to bring civil lawsuits against any company that violates the parental permission requirements or harms a resident of the state through their platform. Representative Charlie Thompson, Republican from Charles City, said the bill filled in the gap between 13-year-olds, the minimum age to use social media under federal rules, and adults, and could act as a safeguard against the manipulation of minors online and further harm that stems from it. "I'd like this body to be cognizant of the number of deaths that have occurred because of exploitation of social media by bad actors," said Thompson, the bill's sponsor. The measure passed the House with wide bipartisan support on an 88-6 vote. "I think the intent of this bill is very good," said Representative Sammy Sheets, Democrat from Cedar Rapids. "As somebody who grew up during the age of social media, I know firsthand some of the harms that can have on the mental health of children in our state." More than half of Iowans, 55%, say they favor the bill, the Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll found, while 42% oppose it. The remaining 3% are not sure. Support among Iowa parents with children under 18 is similar to support from all adults, with 57% of parents in favor and 41% opposed. The poll results reflect differences across party lines, with 61% of Iowa Republicans in favor of the bill, while 35% oppose it. In contrast, only 39% of Democrats support the bill, while a majority at 55% do not. Among independents, 57% favor the bill, while 42% oppose it. And support for the bill also varies among age groups, the poll shows. 59% of Iowans ages 45 and older support the legislation, while 52% of Iowans under age 35 oppose it. Lawmakers in several other states, including Arkansas, Ohio, and Utah, have sought similar restrictions on social media for youth. But those laws have run into resistance, primarily from a tech trade group that includes Snap, Google, TikTok, and Meta, which operates Facebook and Instagram. That group has taken those measures to court and won temporary injunctions in Arkansas and Ohio. Representative John Willis, Republican from Spirit Lake, told the Register in February that he believed Iowa's law should survive a challenge if taken to court.
House bill would create Gadsden flag car plates. Stephen Gruber Miller. Iowans could buy custom yellow "Don't Tread on Me" license plates under a bill that passed the Iowa House Wednesday. The Iowa House voted 60-34 to pass House File 2639, which allows the Iowa Department of Transportation to issue custom Iowa license plates with the Gadsden flag, which was designed during the Revolutionary War, 1775, by Christopher Gadsden, and was used by the Continental Marines. The yellow flag depicts a coiled timber rattlesnake above the phrase, "Don't Tread on Me." The flag and its slogan are associated with individual liberty, limited government, and gun rights. In recent years, it has been a mainstay at conservative rallies and protests. "I do want to just express my appreciation for giving the Gadsden flag the respect it deserves as a symbol which memorializes our American history and the fight that we had to fight to get our liberty," said the bill's floor manager, Representative Jeff Shipley Republican of Birmingham. The license plates would cost $50, and drivers would pay another annual $50 fee in addition to their normal annual registration fees. If a driver wants a personalized license plate, they would also pay an additional $25 fee and $5 more each year. The money from the fees would go to the Department of Public Safety, which would distribute it as grants to nonprofits to provide training on the right to keep and bear arms. The department would have to give first preference for the grants to any official state association of the National Rifle Association and similar nonprofit organizations. The Iowa Firearms Coalition is the NRA-sanctioned state organization in Iowa. Democrats proposed a number of amendments that would instead send the money raised to other organizations and causes, including the LGBTQ advocacy groups, the NAACP, funds to buy city school supplies for public school classrooms, A Area Education Agency support services, lung cancer awareness, mental health services, organized labor, and to pay down school lunch debt for low-income families. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confis, Democrat of Windsor Heights, said that Democrats offered the amendments to highlight the priorities that aren't being considered by Republicans. There are issues this state is facing, and we are spending time on a new license plate to fund the NRA, she said. This is not what we were sent here to do. This is not what we should be prioritizing. Representative Brian Meyer, Democrat of Des Moines, said Republicans in the Iowa legislature have supported taking away Iowa's freedoms, including abortion, LGBTQ, and workers' rights. The fact that the majority in this legislature, the Republican majority, is eager to memorialize this symbol on a license plate is beyond ironic, in my opinion, Meyer said. This Republican legislature has consistently attacked civil rights, civil liberties, and the personal freedoms that are the bedrock of the American spirit. Shipley said the license plate would be another great addition to the rich fabric of our state. I think it's very fair to say that across the history of human civilization, I can't think of anywhere in the world where individual rights, individual sovereignty has been more cherished and respected than here in the great state of Iowa, he said. The bill now goes to the Iowa Senate, where a similar bill was introduced last year but did not advance.
And a few shorts from the states. Montana, from Great Falls, Montana, Glacier National Park will receive more than $1.9 million in funding from the Inflation Reduction Act to continue work on advancing bison reintroduction, inventory cultural resources impacted by climate change, and to protect and restore White Park pine, the park said. And from Lincoln, Nebraska, a civilian employee of the United States Air Force was arrested in Nebraska and charged with transmitting top-secret defense information on a foreign online dating platform over a period of several months in 2022, the U.S. Justice Department revealed. And from New Hampshire, from Rochester, New Hampshire, the family of a man killed in a motorcycle accident last year is suing the city, the driver of the car involved in the collision, and the company they say was contracted to repair traffic lights in the city. And from Santa Fe, New Mexico, a company looking to store spent nuclear fuel in southeast New Mexico went before a federal appeals court to defend the proposal from environmental groups and an oil company in the Permian Basin.